Sup, sports fans, and welcome back to Low Expectations, the Gruter Golf Podcast, presented by the No Laying Up Podcast Network. Tonight, you've got Haley.
Hello.
Kiki.
Good evening.
And me, Jenny. So we have zero announcements tonight, so we're just going to dive right into things. And I feel like we're always saying that we're thrilled to have guests, but we've been chasing this one for quite some time. Years, actually, maybe. So we're really humbled to welcome one of our very favorite golf personalities to the show tonight, the one and only Phil Landis, a.k.a. Big Randy, from our parent company, No Laying Up. So, Randy, welcome to the show.
Ladies, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. I can't help but think you're, you know, yanking my chain a little bit with how excited you are to have me. I feel like me being the guest will set a new low bar for low expectations, but
not possible.
It's wonderful to be here. Big fan of you guys. It was awesome to finally meet everybody, hang out in Toledo back in late August, early September at the Solheim Cup, and what a thrill to be on the podcast. So thank you very much for having me.
A real honor. And we know that I had to stop myself from asking you this before we were recording a bunch of times, because we know you're probably skidding to the finish here of a huge weekend in the NL universe. So do you want to tell us a little bit? How was the NIT? We're dying to know. We saw a little bit on Instagram, but.
Oh my gosh. We could not have gotten worse weather. Literally could not have gotten worse weather. You know, I lived in Florida 3.5 years, and the 2 days for our NIT were easily worse than any two consecutive days I was ever in Florida. You know, at points it just felt like the world was conspiring against us. But with that said, huge props to, first of all, our event planner, Aaron Gregory, and then second of all, well, three props. Second of all, to the staff of Jack's Beach. And then third of all, to everybody there. We absolutely made the most of it. What should have been 54 holes of golf plus an 18-hole championship round turned into 27 holes of golf plus a 3-hole shootout, accompanied instead by lots of hanging out in the cart barn, where games of cornhole broke out, beer pong, beer dice.
I feel like I saw a lot of pool.
I was going to say.
There was like a pool tournament.
There was no pool tournament. I think that was an off-campus activity at one of the bars during one of the rain delays. Yeah. At times it felt very off-campus college party.
Wow. Sounds great.
I love that. That sounds great.
Which is awesome. Yeah. Kind of a throwback. Just in the moldy old cart barn. So we had a great weekend. You know, where we weren't able to play a lot of golf, what we did have was ample time to actually hang out, get to talk to a lot of people, and be in close proximity with the 95 other people there. So it was, all things considered, we made the most of it. And yeah, we got to get you ladies there next year. You guys, you know, stood us up. Too busy.
Oh my God.
You know, it was around the world.
It
yeah,
was not at all an easy decision, Randy. Let me tell you, like, we were all just really heartbroken. We really wanted to go because it's one of the most sought after invitations, I'd say, in golf today. People are really scrambling to get there. How does everybody qualify in? I mean, we didn't qualify in either. We were going as freeloaders. So, you know.
We you guys must have been privy to that. Yeah, you guys must have been privy to that month and a half projected forecast.
Inside knowledge.
There are a few different ways to get to the NIT. It is the culmination of our Refuge event series, the Refuge being our message board as part of our community called The Nest, which anybody is welcome to join for a small annual fee of $99. They can visit our website and sign up. But throughout the year, NLU, we put on events where top finishers will qualify for the NIT. And then there are a ton of Refuge organized events where people in our community put together events. And same way, people qualify through there. And then, you know, we hold some invitations back for friends, family, VIPs in your case.
Media.
So, and, you know, we try to do each event, whether it's NLU organized or Refuge organized, we try to encourage people to tie it to a charity. So yeah, it's just a wonderful, wonderful way to meet folks in real life, hang out, spend some time together. And, you know, we do all this. It's tough to make adult friends. I'm sure. I don't know if you guys are old enough to be going through that or not, but you get to a certain age and it's just hard. And so
1000%, especially in a new city, Randy, you and I,
can, I know, you know, I'm talk about that. Living it a little bit right now, but, so this is an outlet for folks. So,
love it.
Props to the community and yeah, for sure. You guys got to get down next year.
Oh yeah. I will drop whatever.
Yeah, we're gonna find a our wedding calendar around it. Yeah, exactly.
I feel like we'll plan some rest before.
And I was remiss. I should have said, you know, we had a joint NLU Bruder Golf event, the Mixed Troubles, in September up in New Jersey, which I'm sorry I didn't get to go to. But that was part of our tournament calendar as well. I believe there were a couple qualifiers from there. So
yeah, we were
lots
not
of different
one of them.
Ways to get involved. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That was great.
I mean, golf's tough, you know, it's hard to qualify. I don't know if I'll ever qualify in, you know, on my own merit, but
Jen, what are you talking about? In Denver, you literally qualify.
Oh, okay. No, but not kind of.
And you have your sights on the senior tour.
That's true, but that's, you know, we're not even going to be talking about competition for another 10 years, you know?
Where is this one coming from?
I did just. I used my Callaway clubs though for the first time this past weekend. And so maybe, we might be cooking with gas here, you know.
We'll
have to see. So nice. I mean, like, I don't know whether it was like the honeymoon glow of it all, like, you know, like literally like forgot to unwrap my putter before I got to the first green. Like got to the first green. I was like, oh shit, the wrapper is still on here.
That's
you know?
Amazing.
But yeah, I mean it was a thrill just to have the new sticks, you know.
Let me ask you this. Is that I got to think outdoor golf season's just about winding down. Is that right?
Yeah.
The NIT kind of marked the end of golf season for me. Coming back to Denver, I'm happily putting my clubs in the closet for a couple months, I think.
Wow, really? But do you guys have like trips or anything? Like, when's the next time that you like take off? You know, that seems like it must be right around. I didn't think that you could ever put your clubs away.
Oh, no, they're going away. No work trips until 2022. So very nice. Yeah.
That is the off season indeed.
Yeah.
Well, Randy, we really want to take a deep dive here tonight because if your fans are anything like us, you know, they're really curious about you. And we saw firsthand kind of how rabid your fan base is at the Solheim Cup. You got called out like more than the players did, I would say.
Yeah, you know what's funny about that? You know what's funny about that is what's the saying? You know, I'm going to butcher the saying where it's like better to be quiet than to say something, or better not to be a fool. What's the saying where essentially it's like you don't want to speak out because everybody knows you're a fool. So it's better just to stay quiet. I feel like that's me with like this intrigue around me. I think people are only interested about me because they don't know anything about me. And so
that
if I keep this allure, maybe folks stay interested, which I don't really care if they are or not. But the minute I start explaining anything about myself, it's like, oh my God, this guy's boring as hell. What, you know, what's going on there?
Oh my gosh. We doubt that. We doubt that.
We don't think so.
Yeah, don't worry. You know, it's not too much of a deep dive. We're really curious to know, like, did you always want to be a golf podcaster, like, growing up?
No.
Was that your dream?
No. Are you kidding me? I still...
As a little boy.
Yeah. Are you kidding me? It's amazing to think what my job actually is and how I got here. Nowhere near what I would have expected. Nothing at all.
Yeah. So it was through, actually, we brought up Toledo earlier, and, you know, that's where we all, you know, became officially friends, IRL. But legend has it that your grandparents had a little golf course near Toledo. And also legend has it that your grandmother was your first golf Sherpa. So can you tell us a little bit more about that and how you got into the game originally?
God, what research by the crack
journalist.
Golf
I've been prepared
department.
For this. I'm not even kidding, for such a long time.
Yeah. Well, you have some good info. Yeah, my dad's side of the family is from just outside Toledo, so special place for our family. And my dad's mom, my grandma, grew up on a golf course. Her dad, So my great grandfather, who I never knew, bought a plot of land in farm country, like I said, Northwest Ohio, and had the idea to turn it into a golf course. And so that's what he did. He had all daughters, and my grandma, being the youngest, was kind of the tomboy and worked the golf course for him, was always looking for a game. And she grew up to really love the game, was on a very local level, you know, competed in tournaments, won some events, but was a very avid golfer and a successful golfer. And so when I was, you know, a small boy, going up to Napoleon is the little town where she lived. Napoleon had a 9-hole golf course. I should mention that my great grandfather's golf course, I don't know exactly how long it was in operation, but eventually it was converted back to farmland and then sold. And so it's not like we don't have a golf course in the family any longer. But I digress. So you're exactly right. Going up to Napoleon, there was a little Muni 9-hole course that I would love going out and playing with my grandmother. There was a putt-putt course right there that was so much fun. And so between that, really, I think that's what fostered the love and appreciation for golf in me. And then, you know, coming back to, I grew up in Cincinnati, did a couple very, you know, those week-long clinics where your parents stick you in there for a few hours so they can go run errands. Did a couple of those and got into golf in other ways. But certainly my grandma and her love of the game, I think, was a real spark for me.
Love that.
I'm picturing her as
a patriarchal storyline here.
I'm picturing her as one of the founders of the LPGA.
You know, that's what she kind of looks like in the old photographs. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Right? Like, that's like the imagery I have in my head. So,
yeah. Oh, well, and I can say, you know, my dad and I always laugh. She passed away, several years ago now. And I think NLU had kind of started, but none of us were doing it full time. It was very much like not a business, and certainly nothing to the extent that it is now. But we laugh, you know, even going to the Solheim Cup, she would have gotten such a big kick out of that. I got into the team room Sunday, Monday night, and was playing pool with Dame Laura Davies, who, I mean, I can just picture telling my grandma that and the smile and her just shaking her head in disbelief. So it is fun. When I do get those experiences, she's someone I often think about in those situations.
Jen is really jealous of that. You're yes. Playing pool with Dame Laura Davies.
You might be able to tell by her toothless grin.
Based on, okay, guys, like she's going to take out a restraining order against me if she listens to this podcast. Like, she comes up in almost every episode somehow.
She will continue to come up in every episode.
I got to tell you, I was so nervous. She was playing pool. And so when I got in there, I just immediately, I was like, I was drawn, like, I'd never talked to her. I just wanted to say hi to her. I very sheepishly asked, like, who's got next? She said, I don't know. I said, you know, may I play you? It was very awkward. I felt, Greg from Succession.
Did you actually say that? May I play that? May I play you?
It was something like that. Like, well, may I play? It was very awkward. She's like, yeah, you know, like put down, put down a quarter or a dollar or whatever. She was very good. She's very good pool player. And she's very nice. She's very down to earth. You know, I introduced myself and I was kind of like a kid at Christmas, but she was just very, you know, oh yeah, it's nice to meet you. We're not fast friends or anything, but you know, I feel like I got an in maybe next time I see her.
So funny.
Jenny, we'll have to get you guys together at some point.
I need her to like forget my, you know, embarrassments, my prior faux pas, you know. Before we won't bore the listeners. They've heard the story now billions of times about me getting clotheslined by her and then taking a video and I thought I took a picture, but that happened. Yeah,
get over it.
Yeah. I bet she thinks about it every night.
I do.
Yeah, Jen does.
Oh no, I meant Laura, but yeah.
Oh, She probably does. Yeah, she's probably like, who's that moron?
God, remember that over easy American? Yeah, I think I clotheslined her. I'm not sure.
I clotheslined her on purpose.
Yeah.
Just yelled damn
there. Okay, so should we get into the next question?
I think so. We were waiting.
Question.
We were waiting for your own.
Sorry. Okay. So, Randy, we would like to know how you met the men who would become your business partners and what you guys were like in college. You know, if you could set the scene for us, you know, a little bit of college stories, that would be very entertaining.
Oh yeah, sure. Well, they weren't men when I met them. We can start there. the first guy I met was Tron Carter. He was, it was at Miami of Ohio, Miami University, Oxford, Ohio, go Red Hawks. We were both KAs, and I was 2 years older than Todd at that time. And as a freshman, you know, I wasn't very involved with the fraternity. That's a whole other story, but I transferred into Miami. I had been a KA at Washington and Lee, my previous college, and was thankful that there was a KA chapter at Miami because it allowed me easy way to meet some new people and whatnot. But I did not get very involved in chapter meetings or anything like that. In fact, I'm positive, you know, half the people had no idea who I was, which is fine. But I lived in an off-campus house with like 12 other guys called Disorder, very shitty, dilapidated house. And I can remember in the spring, it would have been of Todd's freshman year, he had gone through pledging and I guess was an active member, and he came over to Disorder, I don't know, for a party or to hang out or whatever, and you know, just wanted to hang out, you know, enjoyed sports, and we were watching who knows what on TV and just kept coming by, and it was great. And so we invited him. We had some guys leaving the house, and so Todd was one of the guys we invited to live in the house the next year, Disorder. And ooh. So he and I actually became roommates that next year. It was my fifth year, his sophomore year, I guess is what it was. And my plan was I was only going to be there one semester. I needed one semester to graduate, so I was going to leave at winter break. Well, fast forward, I mean, this kind of typifies college me. I went down to the registrar's office to like sign up for graduation. They informed me I was 3 credits short and I would not, in fact, be graduating. I could walk. And so that was an awkward conversation I had with my parents.
Hey, we've all been there.
Bring the grandparents to the ceremony. Come on up.
Yeah.
But I'm not actually graduating, which is kind of a bummer. So,
like the empty envelope?
Yeah, exactly. Before all that, though, I had accepted a job because I thought I was graduating. I was going to go out to Breckenridge, Colorado, and I was going to be a chairlift operator for the rest of the ski season. And Todd was like, that sounds awesome. I think I'm going to do that. And I was like, okay, great. Like, you're dropping out of school, though. Like, you got to understand you're dropping out of school. He's like, no, it's cool. You know, and I can remember his parents wanting to get on the phone with my parents. I think his mom was like horrified, thought I was an awful influence. And I promise I wasn't like twisting his arm, but I was, of course, like, oh, yeah. Sean, if you want to come out to Colorado, that'd be sick, man. We can drive out together. That'd be awesome.
I don't mind.
Yeah. I'm getting a little sidetracked here, but one thing, this kind of all brings a very small world into focus. But through those conversations, we put it together that Todd's mom, whose name is Peggy, and my mom, whose name is Peggy, were in the same wedding as bridesmaids like 30 years prior. So it was my mom's best college friends and one of Todd's mom's best high school friends. They were both bridesmaids for this woman. And so when we made that connection, that kind of put Todd's mom at ease. She knew I was a good guy. I came from a good family. And so he ended up going out to Colorado for me. It was a disaster. We couldn't find an apartment. Yeah. we ended up sleeping on this other guy's floor I knew for like 2.5 months till our money ran out. And it was like early February. And when our money was out, our last hurrah was we drove from Breckenridge down to Scottsdale for the Phoenix Open. Because we were like, why not? You know, what do we have to get back to Ohio for? So we went down there for the weekend, went to the tournament. I can remember getting like bottles of wine. We would just drink this like $2 chuck in the parking lot of the golf tournament. And we lived it up. And then we drove cross country back to Ohio. I think Tron spent the rest of the semester as an unenrolled, you know, person up in Oxford. He was living in some attic of some house somewhere. I went to Cincinnati, lived with my parents, and I ended up finishing my degree that summer. I took a couple summer classes, and Todd eventually re-enrolled and finished up in Miami. But that's the bond. So
wow.
John and I...
That's a much better story than I anticipated.
I had no idea.
And it's probably way longer than you cared for. But
not at all.
Good. Not at all.
I think it's all to say that John and I have had... We've been through a lot together, and he was... He and I were kind of thick as thieves from the beginning. And it was through Tron then that I met Chris. Chris and Tron were very close their freshman years. I think they lived a couple doors down from each other in the freshman dorm. And so got to know Chris. Just, you know, we'd be out some nights and we'd see him in a bar or something. We all like golf. We'd talk golf. Chris grew up in Dublin, Ohio. And I remember he invited us. It may have been that summer then after we got back from Colorado. Up to stay at his house during the Memorial Golf Tournament, which we took him up on, had a blast. And so then it was like me, Todd, and Chris. And I was graduating, but we all loved golf. We would start a text thread. We would just, you know, kind of the dumb, pithy stuff we kind of say now we've been saying for, you know, 15 years. It was just via text chain back in those days. It was the three of us. And then... You know, got to know Neil through Todd. Obviously, he's Todd's brother. So he was the fourth member that I really got to know. You know, I Neil is great. You know, Neil's obviously, what, 5-6 years younger than me. You know, kind of in that little brother territory. But just instantly, you know, how can you meet Neil and not like his energy and his vibe? And just got along really well with Neil right from the start. Love hanging out with him. And... Yeah, so I guess to finish out the story, you know, once we kind of had started No Laying Up, we were getting a little bit immersed in the golf world and especially the golf Twitter community, just started tweeting and talking with DJ Pyhowski through Twitter mainly, and eventually crossed paths at a tournament, and eventually he was kind of unsatisfied at the tour, looking to leave, and we were like, why don't you do some work for us? So that was kind of that fifth member of the original five and how I got to know each one of those guys.
Wow. I love that.
What a terrible story.
Wildly entertaining. Oh my God.
Yeah. But you got to know, like Tron. So I mean, I could tell so many stories, you know, he and I spent so many hours on a couch just playing video games. You know, we would, like the whole time we were in Colorado, we ended up not actually taking our jobs because we couldn't find anywhere to live. So we knew we were on borrowed time. So we were like, why screw it? Why don't we just not work? We'll just stay here till our money runs out and go home. You know, we would be not sober by 2 p.m. and we would look forward every day. We would look forward to the daytime Food Network lineup, which was like, you know, Curtis Luck, Take Home Chef. It was Bobby Flay. And that would be like the highlight of our day was like 2 hours, you know, 4 half-hour shows on the Food Network. That would get us to like 4 o'clock. My buddy, whose place we were crashing at, would get home from work. Then we'd like go get food and go get more not sober and kind of rinse and repeat every day. I can't express how much of like shitheads we were.
I have a question though. Were you skiing at all?
Yeah, and so every few days we would ski, but we would because the lift passes cost so much money.
Oh yeah, that's what I was wondering. I was like, how long could you make, you know, squeeze a dime?
Yeah, no, we would have to wait till certain friends were in certain lift positions where they could let us onto the mountain. Yeah.
Honestly, this all sounds like absolute paradise, like my college self. Like that was actually my dream when I graduated. I wanted to move to specifically Breckenridge and do that.
Yeah. I'm honestly shocked, Jen, that you never made it happen. Yeah.
I'm not organized enough to like learn how to move. I've never moved. I've never left Boston.
I'll say this, Jen. There's still time. Still can't figure it out. Don't ever give up on that dream. There's still time to be a ski bum.
Oh my God.
Yeah, you never know. You never know.
One more story with Tron. You know, we were out in a bar one time. He was not 21 and he was wearing a Deion Sanders, like 21 jersey. And, was just acting a fool. Like, I don't know. Have you guys been around Tron when he's like drunk? Yeah. Like drunk,
I think
drunk.
So. Well, maybe not drunk.
There's no way of knowing, but
there's no way
we
have.
Yeah,
we have
no baseline. Well, it's high energy. It's bursts of, you know, emotion and passion and whatnot. You know, he's doing the Ray Lewis like celebration dance here and, you know, blowing somebody up over there. He gets tapped on the shoulder in a bar, I think by an undercover cop or something. He's like, hey, I need to see your ID. Of course, he's not 21. And he's like, you got to come with me. And I God, Toronto will probably tell a story. But somehow the cop was like, or Tron was like, man, I'm prime time. I'm 21. You know, the cop's like, no, but you're not 21. But he's like, no, I'm prime time. I'm 21, baby. The cop was like, no, we got to go to jail. You're not 21.
We got to go to jail.
So that was a fun memory. I don't know. There's a lot of that. Like, I feel like I probably corrupted Tron. He probably was like a point and a half lower GPA than he needed to be because he was hanging out with. You know, with
hey, stole him away where you all are now.
Yeah,
he stole
him
away to Colorado, and thank God the Peggies knew each other.
Exactly.
Here comes the Peggies for bridesmaids.
The mom's talking on the phone in advance is really, really funny to me. Like that.
Peggy Schuster was like, "No, I need to talk to this Peggy Landis on the phone. This Phil sounds like a bad guy.
It's a bad apple."
Yes, that's what it was. Like, what? No, he's corrupting you, Todd. No, you're not going to Colorado.
That's beautiful.
That's great. That's
I'm so glad. I'm so glad we got that. So you've talked a little bit about, you know, the origin story with the group, the original five, as you called them. You sort of hinted at the beginning days of No Laying Up, but can you tell us a little bit about how No Laying Up was officially born?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, I point to a few key dates. I don't know if they're, you know, official conception dates or not, or delivery dates, if you will. But, you know, one that sticks out is the day Solly told us he had created this Twitter account. And he was like, you know, what should I call it? Like, I don't know, dude. Like, what's Twitter? Like, what are you doing? Like, he's like, I don't know. Like, Twitter, you can just kind of tweet whatever. You know, for watching golf, just say some stuff. I'm like, all right. He's like, I'm going to call it No Laying Up. So, that was, gosh, that had to have been 2012, winter of 2012, maybe.
Were you still, you would have been out of college by then, right?
Out of college, yeah. Out of college. In fact, I was just out of grad school and living in Oxford, Ohio. So I used 2 years of grad school to I took a real job at first, but then I quickly quit the real job and moved to Oxford, Ohio, back to where Miami was. But a buddy of mine was coaching the local high school basketball team and needed a freshman basketball coach. So I took my newly minted graduate degree and moved to Oxford to be a freshman basketball coach and substitute teacher for the winter. And it was some point that I remember Solly created the Twitter account, I believe, and then maybe that was the fall. And then it was like New Year's Day, we launched the blog or the website, if you will. And that was with the help from Neil, registered nolayingup.com. Another momentous occasion. The best thing that ever happened to us, and I tell this to anybody, is we never started No Laying Up for it to be a business, because I think had we tried to start something with the end goal of being a business, it would have failed spectacularly. So the best thing that ever happened to us was we all had other jobs, you know, kind of real lives, and this was purely just something we could play around with. And so had the Twitter account, you know, posting stupid memes and God knows what. I don't even want to look back at some of those tweets.
Damn, we should have done that.
Yeah.
Started
a website. And then I can remember our very first podcast. You know, we had discussed kind of podcasts are then growing. And I was like, man, I'm starting to listen to some podcasts. I don't really know of any golf podcasts. So it was like, why don't we do one? Very self-taught. None of us had any idea what we were doing. And I believe it was April of 2014. We were at my timeshare in Hilton Head. Ladies, I'm a timeshare owner. 1 week a year.
Oh, hey.
On Hilton Head Island. Yep. Yep. One of my first purchases out of college when I got a real job. Scooped up week 15 at Spice Bush in Sea Pines on Hilton Head Island.
I am loving your immediate post-college years, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Can't wait for the biopic, honestly.
Yeah.
I was wondering. I was searching. I feel like I still am searching a little bit, but we were going in a lot of different directions. Yeah. But I had the boys come it always coincides with the Heritage Golf Tournament at Harbortown. Wow. And so I had the boys come in, and I believe we got liquored up at a Japanese steakhouse on the hibachi, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And,
fun.
Came back to the pad, had a big bowl of tortilla chips, because if you ever track down episode one, you can hear us all munching tortilla chips throughout the episode. Press play on this little microphone that we set right in the middle of the table and just let her rip. I think, I think we went in on Kuchar and, so that was the first podcast. So those were kind of some of the big milestones. And we just kind of slowly kept at it. Solly was instrumental in kind of keeping the podcast momentum going through some years when, you know, we were doing other stuff with our lives. He was, by that time, moved over to Amsterdam. We were somewhat keeping up with the website, still tweeting stuff. And I think our big break, you know, all credit to Callaway. I think it was Chris who originally got to know Chad Coleman, #Chad, who worked at Callaway at the time. And they were, you know, hey, maybe we could sponsor the podcast. Really? that would be something, you know, that would be pretty amazing to think about. And so, God, probably peanuts, right? But we started doing the Callaway ad reads. And you know, one thing, sorry, I know this is probably so boring to the listeners.
No, it's not, Randy. This is why we had you on. We asked you these questions. We want to know.
You guys are nice. Now, the other big thing I will say is Neil starting to print t-shirts. That was another very formative moment. I don't know the exact date on that. He was living out in San Francisco and was just doing these, like, I don't know, 50, 100 t-shirt runs with this very basic no laying up logo on it, and he would have these boxes in his apartment in San Francisco, and I don't even know who we were selling them to, maybe through Twitter. but a few people were buying them, and we always looked at the t-shirts and any merchandise, I mean, we still kind of do, is just like really marketing. But between the introduction and gradual buildup of the merchandise, kind of getting, I guess, a brand name out there. Plus, you know, the podcast is obviously very good for us. That starting in 2014 with the underlying social media, you know, for as much as Twitter can really suck sometimes, I think back 8-10 years ago, it was much more naive and innocent, fun, if you will. And
not as many bots.
Played a huge role for us. So, you know, I can never be too critical of Twitter, at least back in that day. It was instrumental in helping us. So those kind of things just coming, and, you know, you pound away at it. I think Callaway, as the audience kind of grows, you know, I think you just, I can remember Solly coming back from Amsterdam 2017, saying, I don't want to go back to my accounting job. I want to, you know, if we're ever going to do this full time, I think we got to just do it. And so he was the first to kind of jump in and go for it full time. And the four of us followed suit over the next couple of years. So very happy accident. I, you know, you asked me before, did I think I'd be doing this? Like, no chance in hell. Yeah, you just kind of got to pinch yourself sometimes. We're very fortunate to do what we do. So it's pretty incredible how it's worked out, I guess. Kind of feels like a wave. Sorry, the last thing, honest to God, you know, it kind of feels like a wave in surfing that we're riding. And like, I really hope there's a lot of runway there, but like, part of me is like, God, this is for sure going to end tomorrow. Right. Like, people are going to realize like, these guys are idiots. And so I think always in my mind, I kind of always feel like, oh yeah, no, this is going to end tomorrow. Like, no sense in like kind of planning long-term. But here we are, you know, we're a few years into it all full time, and things, knock on wood, things are pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we totally disagree. Yeah. I see so many more years of this for you personally.
Yeah. You know, it's funny to think about. I'm 38. It's something we talk about. Like, we have to age gracefully, right? We gotta, you know, we can't act like we're mid-20s because we're not. And so trying to come to terms with that, and hopefully our audience and people that want to follow along come along with us. But it doesn't work if we're trying to pretend that we're young. So I think that's one thing, you know, over the next several years, if we are, you know, able to keep doing it, it's just staying genuine to who we are and where we are in life, I think, will be important.
It's actually a good point. I oftentimes feel like I am still pretending to be 22 years old.
Oh my gosh.
In my golf journey.
Well, you guys, let me just say, you guys are young. You guys are young bucks. You guys, I mean, like, I'm not just 31. Trying to flatter you.
When's your birthday actually, Randy?
October 10th.
Oh my God.
We missed it.
Happy birthday.
Oh, well, thank you.
We missed it.
Monthly.
I guess compared to me, I mean, you guys are spring chickens, but I hear what you're saying. You know, what was the age for you guys? This is kind of getting off topic. There was a very specific birthday when I crossed that Rubicon, if you will, from like feeling like I'm in college or could hang with college kids to like, oh no, I kind of got to like act like an adult now. And I'm curious if you guys ever felt that distinctly on a certain birthday.
The summer of 2017. Specifically, wasn't a birthday. But specifically, the summer of 2017, I was like, I need to grow up.
Well, and how old were you?
You're 27.
Nothing good. No, yeah,
you're 26.
No, I was 26. Yeah, when I was 26, I was like, you gotta shape up. Well, because for me, it was a lot. Like, my weekends were drastically different from my weekdays. Like, I was a very different person at work than I was outside of work, and I was like, these two people need to meet somehow and meld together in a way that is sustainable. You
did
know,
you have an alter
they were
ego?
Fighting.
Did your alter ego have a name?
Well, Jen for the weekend, Jen forever.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah,
like
yeah.
So. Yeah, Jen for the weekend had to become Jen forever at a certain point. You know, we had to transition. You know, the transition's still happening. You know, I try not to get too hung up on.
I think it's a never-ending transition.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah,
we're all working progress.
We can still hang with the young bucks. Like, I was hanging with some young bucks this past weekend at this bar that like was. I ran into my two younger cousins there. They're like, "What are you doing here?" I was like, "I'm just trying to hang out."
No, but here's the difference. Here's the difference. You can for sure hang, and the amount of time you can hang, you know, it as you guys are beginning to learn, decreases, right? But I think the difference for me was there, and it was when I turned 27. I don't know what it was about 27, going from 26 to 27. But when I was 26, I felt like not only could I hang with, like, you know, I can hang on a college campus. I belong here. You know, I fit in. And then for some reason, when I was 27, I was like, nope, that just sounds totally different. Like, you are an adult, and like that world is not for you anymore.
Quick question. Were you still living in Oxford at the time?
God. No, this was pre-Oxford. Yeah. No. This was in Cincinnati. I was working as an auditor. Post-college Oxford, pre-high school basketball coaching Oxford.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to write out the timeline, I think. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like this year really hit me hard on the age thing. And I think that was just a composite effect of the pandemic and not being in New York City and just being old.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Pandemic aged me by 10 years easily.
Definitely.
Because I get exhausted now. Like, yeah. If I'm out, I'm like, I would like to go home right now. There's like a whole season of Vanderpump Rules for me to watch and have a pug, you know? So,
which,
I'm like,
Jen, I can say, good things. Having met you at 18, Jen, I never thought I'd see the day.
I didn't go home for like years. I never went home.
For days at a time, you would not go home.
I like wouldn't leave. I was the last person everywhere.
Until you passed out.
Yeah. Definitely COVID, I feel like for me, had a lot to do with it. Yeah, because once you were out of the routine of going out, it was just like so much easier to be like, I can't go out again. Like,
can't possibly do that.
There's no way.
That also goes back to why we couldn't come to the NIT.
Yeah,
exactly. We got tired and we were like, we had
chronic fatigue from the fall. Chronic tired. It was terrible.
I think, God, I see commercials for that. Isn't that like Crohn's disease or something?
Oh my gosh.
Honestly, probably.
Not to make light of Crohn's disease or anybody that has it, but I feel like there's like a chronic fatigue that I see, you know, watching golf tournaments, especially one of those.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You get a lot of diseases.
Prescription
a
drug. Lot of, yeah.
Yeah.
Spoken like a true commercials ever.
Oh my God.
The worst commercials ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Randy, do you ever?
They're all for old men.
Mm-hmm.
Like the copper fit, you know?
Randy, you just covering, you know, kind of saying you don't want to offend anyone in the Crohn's community. Do you ever get Twitter trolls coming after you for things that you say? That just made me think of that.
There've been a couple. There was one guy that was really keen on like telling me I was like pooping my pants a lot. Yeah. And I was like, he was kind of notorious through our Twitter, going after multiple, like I wasn't the first NLU target. I think maybe DJ was the first.
What the heck?
I mean, I'll try to make this like not as vulgar as possible, but just like, you know, so-and-so takes big nasty shits and like just like to the point where, you know, you laugh at the first couple, but it was a little too persistent. Like I like, there's nothing better than a creative troll, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing better. And the first couple times was making me laugh, but it was a little too often and just hitting the same note over and over. So finally I think I ended up blocking that person. They would show up every now and again in like live show, the chats.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's kind of scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
A lot of dedication too.
They're, you know, I'm sure you guys get it so much worse, but just anytime I tweet out, I mean, I hate to say it, but some of the women's golf stuff, and you just get you just get very dumb replies. And I think it was Spencer Hall maybe at the start of 2020, or maybe it was even this past year, but he was like, you know, it's the year of the block, like absolutely just block early. Don't think about it. Life's too short. So I've employed that strategy where if somebody tweets at me with something just very dumb and, you know, just Neanderthal, meathead, whatever it may be, whether it's women's golf or another subject, I just very quickly block and move on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's wise, honestly.
What's the alternative, right? If it's not funny or creative, I don't really want to read it. And two, like, I don't really want to talk to you. I'm not going to change your mind. So it's like, what are we doing here? It's easier for everybody. I'm just going to block it, and then we can go our separate ways.
Yeah. At a certain point, I unfollowed people on Instagram, like people that like I know. You know, like if I like was seeing their posts, and I was like, you're fucking annoying. I just unfollowed them because I was like, I'm on here for my enjoyment, right? And like, if I'm not enjoying your shit, you know, like I can still like you in real life. I'd just rather not hate you on the internet, you know?
Yeah.
Like it allows me to like you better if I don't have to see what you think is appropriate to put on the internet, you know?
That's unfortunately exactly applies right. to a lot of people.
I know. Yeah. I know. And so that's a little different than trolls, but I'm with you. You got to purge who you follow, both Twitter and Instagram. There's some people that I mute on Twitter. And I think if they knew that, they'd be quite disappointed. But it's like, dude, I can't. Right?
Yeah.
I just can't. I can't
the
do
mute
it.
Is so powerful.
I love the mute.
I use it nonstop on Instagram.
Lovely feature.
Oh, you can mute on Instagram too.
You can mute on Instagram. Yeah. And you can mute for a certain amount of time too. You can take a break from somebody and just be like, let's not engage for a little while, you know?
You can do the post or the story. So if you know they're posting a lot of stories, you don't want to see that shit, you can mute that. Keep the post in your feed.
That's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think? So I'm much more involved on Twitter than Instagram. I mean, I have an Instagram, but I don't really do much. For me, I think it comes down to, I can't get over, like who am I putting this picture up for, right? You know, maybe my mom will see it. And then at that point, it's like, why don't you just text your mom or call her and you can tell her all about the experience. I just get so in my own head about like, dude, nobody cares that, you know, you saw this beautiful sunset. You know, who are you doing it for? So I spend most of my time on Twitter because at least there, you know, I fight the same thing. Like, dude, who cares what you have to say? But at least sometimes it lets me just get off steam and you can have some genuine interactions at times. Instagram's tough for me.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
Yeah, Instagram, I mean, there are a couple of things. Like, A, Instagram's gotten so corporate at this point that, like, every other post you see is an ad, and even the ones that aren't, like, especially on our golf Instagram, right, when you're going through the Grutter Golf, it's like, it's a lot of companies, you know, and it's a lot of, like, we're kind of a fine line between a company and, like, you know, it's obviously a company, right, but it's also just, like, kind of us, like, our Grutter Golf account, too, so, you know. I think like Hallie said it one time, it's like, you know, if you think that somebody will get a kick out of this, like just toss it up. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of how we go about it now is like, if I would see this and I would like be somewhat entertained by it in some sort of way, just chuck it up there, you know, someone might like it.
Which is a great way to do it. And don't get me wrong. There are things I do like on Instagram and are entertaining. I just, some of it to, you know, some of it's like, man, who is this serving? You know?
Oh, yeah. Some of it's very silly. Very, very silly. Yeah,
it's Facebook-y, right? And can I
say
it's never,
getting Facebook-y.
I never had a Facebook account. I was so proud of myself. Wow. From the start, I was like, I don't get it. Why do I have to, you know, have like collect my friends? I don't understand. Something feels very off about it.
Something feels off.
Yeah.
You were right.
And I feel very vindicated about that. And, yeah, sometimes that's what Facebook feels like or Instagram is just, yo, check out this dope vacation I went on where it's like,
It's too many vacations.
Yeah.
And like,
but I do like seeing the pictures of my sister's kids. So, you know, that's, that's why I'm on there.
Yeah, maybe exactly. Cool. It's, you know, good and bad. I mean, I think Twitter is just more entertaining. And like, also I get news from Twitter, right? Like I seldom learn anything from Instagram, but like, and I follow a lot of like comedians and stuff too. So I like laughing. And that's why I like Twitter, because you just like say something and then that's it. You know, like one liners I think are funny. So
yeah,
they've all got a place, you know. But we actually wanted to ask you, I'm glad that you brought up kind of the LPGA flack that you guys catch, because kind of wanted to hear a little bit more about that. Because like, why do people get, so I guess explain it first. So you specifically, Randy, like you are an LPGA fan, an avid fan of the LPGA. And are pretty, you know, outward about that and engaged and, you know, a great advocate for the game, which is excellent. But some people accuse you of being like woke or something. So like, what's up with that? Like, why are people so riled up by that, by you liking the LPGA?
I don't know. Well, I mean, whatever. Let me start with, I love the LPGA. I, honest to God, it's, would 10 times out of 10 rather go to an LPGA event than a PGA event. I probably at this point watch more LPGA than I do PGA. I find, you know, I've tried to think about why that's the case. And I think what I love about the LPGA tour is it's a few things. One, it's the style of play is much more relatable for me. I watch LPGA players and, you know, it's people who hit the golf ball similar distances to me. Of course, they're world class and way better than I'll ever be. But it allows me to dream and kind of picture myself playing awesome golf when I watch them. Whereas, you know, the PGA game is like, I'll never hit the ball. Like it might as well be a different sport at this point. getting to know the LPGA players, you know, from going to certain events or from talking to them, it just is so refreshing how engaging and authentic and happy that they are, you know, when we're out at a golf tournament. And I realize that's kind of maybe fluffing my own ego a little bit, but it's really nice to be like wanted and appreciated somewhere. And not that we don't have great relationships with some PGA guys, but in terms of going to an event and trying to either do podcasts or video or whatever, you know, we're told no multiple times at a PGA event. And we always feel like we're walking on eggshells a little bit, and it's a matter of, okay, well, what can we do? And you juxtapose that against the LPGA, where it's like, oh my God, we'd love to have you guys. How can we help? You know, come on out. We'll, you know, what do you need? We'll do this. We'll do this. Players like, thank you so much for being here. This means a ton. It's like, well, you can't help but like feel good about that. You know, yeah. It's really nice. So, and honestly, I think, you know, watching the LPGA now, you still get many more moments where you can have life-changing wins and life-changing turn of events, right? It's very rare these days on the PGA Tour where somebody winning or doing something will literally change their life, right? And I think that's because, you know, these guys, there's just so much money out there. And I think it gets... Yeah. At the end of the day, like part of the reason I like golf is for the stories and for the people. And I just find the LPGA storylines more captivating, I guess. So that's a long-winded way to say I am all in on the LPGA. I think to your point about like people want to say that's woke or whatever, they can say, honestly, it's one of those things where it's like, that's cool. Like you can say whatever you want, but I'm very comfortable in knowing that it's very genuine for me. And so yeah. I sleep very well at night. I love the LPGA. And if people, you know, kind of get worked up about that, then I kind of just feel sorry for them, because it's awesome golf. It's awesome people. And to kind of willfully miss out on it because of biases or preconceived notions is, I don't know. I guess I just feel sorry for those people.
Yeah. I mean, we do too, honestly. It's really, cause it's really fun. I mean, like, you know, when did you start kind of like tuning into the LPGA? Would you say, was it like somewhat recent or?
I'm, you know, compared to the day oneers, I'm very Johnny come lately. I mean, it's, I would watch maybe some major final rounds. Growing up, it started when I went full time with NLU. So that was spring of 2018. I think the first LPGA event I attended was the KPMG that. Oh gosh, now I might mix that up. I would really have to think about that. But it really got cemented going to those first LPGA events in person and getting to meet people. And it's just such a more relaxed atmosphere in person too. So I tell anybody, you know, if you can get to an LPGA event, go. If you have kids, bring them. You're not fighting crowds. You know, the players are happy to see you. They'll engage with you. You can get right up there and have great views. It's just a fantastic spectator experience too. So I would say certainly, you know, in the last 3 years, I've gone from maybe watching final rounds of majors to, you know, like I can't wait for the Pelican Championship this week.
Oh my God. Perfect segue, Randy.
Yeah.
Because we were.
I'm a pro, so... You know, I do this for a living. So don't act so surprised.
It's like you're reading our show notes.
Yeah.
Seriously, do you have us hacked? Well, actually, I thought that you had us hacked when we listened to your recent interview with Beth Ann, our friend.
Our mutual friend. Yes.
Because that was fantastic. To the listeners, you guys should definitely, if you don't listen to Trap Draw already, I mean, that's probably, you know, again, not to pump you up, my favorite NLU product. It's very fun, you know, very, very nice, lighthearted, and you never know what you're going to get, which is great. So, but he just talked to Beth Ann Nichols of Golf Week. Everyone knows Golf Week Nichols. Very famous. Just a shining beacon of hope in journalism.
The hardest, like, honestly, the hardest working. She does so much for the LPGA in her coverage, and is just a real inspiration and somebody I greatly admire. And it's been a treat to get to know her. Yeah, I honestly, you should see the smile on my face when I'm talking with her. It is like an hour long. Just I feel like a kid at Christmas.
Oh, I love that. Well, you guys were kind of chopping it up about some of, you know, the big storylines coming into the Pelican. I don't think people know what a big deal, you know, the Pelican has kind of become, especially, you know, with like Lydia Ko and everything. Do you want to kind of, what have been your favorite things the night over the next, you know, 3 weeks? What are you watching specifically?
Yeah.
What are you excited about?
Yeah, great question. So the Pelican is the last full field event on the LPGA calendar for 2021. Their season, you know, I'm sure the listeners know, it is contained to a calendar year. So the Pelican's the last full field event, and then they'll have their tour championship, which is the top 60 qualify for that down in Naples. And it is a $1.5 million first place prize, which if you get into the tour championship, right, if you're one of those top 60, whoever wins the tournament gets the $1.5 million. So, you know, no matter if you're the 60th person that has squeaked into the tour championship, if you win that week, you get the first place prize. So with that said, we have drama around that 60th cutoff this week at the Pelican, right? Ladies jockeying for position to make the tour championship. That's certainly something to keep an eye on. You have the Player of the Year race, which is exceptional this year. Jin Young Ko and Nelly Korda are dueling down to the wire. The LPGA has a points-based Player of the Year system, so they don't vote on it.
So
there's no
weird
player vote. Yeah, there's no media vote. It's purely based on points earned per your finish. So you have to finish in the top 10 to earn any points, and then it's, you know, scaled given your finish. So right now, Jin Young Ko is leading the Player of the Year race. Nelly, you know, if Nelly wins one of these last two, would certainly be in a good position to perhaps capture that Player of the Year, which is, of course, a big deal. You have the Vair Trophy, which is given to the lowest scoring average throughout the year. Now, there's some funky stuff going on there where there's a certain minimum amount of rounds you have to play to then qualify, which I believe it's 70 rounds. And so Jin Young Ko and Nelly Korda, who are 1-2 in that race, are not going to get to the requisite 70 rounds. And so it's going to bump down to whoever the best scoring average is that has completed 70 rounds on the LPGA Tour. So it's looking like it'll be Lydia Ko, barring some blowups either this week or at the Tour Championship. That's something to keep an eye on. Of course, you have, you know, we talked about the top 60. When you're just talking about any LPGA status for next year, you got to look at first the top 100, get pretty good priority for the 2022 LPGA season. This is top 100 on their season-long CME points list. And so, of course, there's some jockeying for position there. And then anything outside from 101 to 125, you get partial LPGA status, but those players who finish there are going to have to go play in the Q Series, which is a two-event tournament, late November, early December, which again kind of is all for status on the LPGA. And, you know, for those not playing well enough, they'll go down to the Symetra Tour. So, yeah, you got a lot going on.
There's a lot going on.
And something near and dear to our heart, a player that we sponsor, one of our young hitters, Lauren Coughlin, comes into the Pelican in, I believe, the 106th position. It might be 104th, I forget. But right there on the cutoff of that top 100, she had to Monday qualify a couple days ago just to get into the event. She won the Monday qualifier, which I should say comes on the heels of her winning our NIT event last weekend.
Honestly, the juju was good.
Where she braved the conditions, right? There's some awesome pictures of her putting on our plaid jacket. So we are big Lauren Coughlin fans this week with a good week. I you know, certainly with a made cut, I think she'll jump up inside that top 100, essentially get not have to go to Q Series, have good full season status on the LPGA Tour, which would be massive for her. So that's, you know, kind of the game within the game this weekend at the Pelican, and then the following week down in Naples will be the Tour Championship for those top 60. And that's really cool because, again, that's the $1.5 million first place prize, which, getting back to something I said earlier, you know, that's a ton of money for these for these women. And, you know, truly life-changing stuff, especially for somebody, you know, that would be down in that, 40 to 60 range. If they could sneak out a tournament win, I mean, that's massive. So it'll be a lot of fun to watch.
So, that was an awesome rundown. Crazy. Yeah, no, it's fantastic. Actually, I have a question.
Hangers now, because... come at me. Yeah. Go on. Who's calling this LPGA, you know, who's like, calling this fandom fake?
Honestly, I mean, did you have that written down at all? That was just off the cuff.
That's a steel trap. Wow. That's memory like an elephant there.
A true professional here.
Yeah.
Was Lydia Ko unaware of the whole like Vare trophy on the line until Beth Ann asked her? Like, that was what I was wondering, because she had bowed out of the Pelican and she was just gonna do the Saudi situation. What was it?
So the Saudis are have the Ramco some events. Yeah.
The last weekend.
Tied in with the Ladies European Tour. I gotta think she wasn't really aware. And now what I failed to mention is, you know, this Vare trophy and the Player of the Year, what those come with are Hall of Fame points. And so
another wonky system.
If you allow me.
This is crazy.
LPGA.
Yes. I think people need to know about this. This is wild.
I need to know about it.
Only way that it's like, is this the only, you know, Hall of Fame in which it's done this way?
To my knowledge.
Know. Yeah. It brought up the gap in my knowledge about, you know, Hall of Fames in general. But Randy, continue though. Tell the people. Yeah. It's crazy.
So I think, you know, most people think of like the Baseball Hall of Fame, for instance, and it's voted on by sports writers. Right. And, that's the way people gain admittance to that Hall of Fame. Well, on the LPGA Tour, just like their Player of the Year, that their Hall of Fame is purely points-based, and those points are purely based on your on-course performance. So you need 27 points over your career to qualify for the Hall of Fame. And essentially, once you get 27 points, you are admitted into the Hall of Fame. It's not like you're up for debate at that point. It's if you get to 27 points, you're in. Now, there's one caveat. You have to have 10 years of membership on the LPGA Tour, which Lorena Ochoa has 37 points that she earned throughout her career. But I think she was only playing for 8 years, which to me seems asinine not to let her in. Like, I think in this day and age, the points – should just be the thing where if you get 27, I don't care if you do it in like 4 years.
Wouldn't that be more of a reason to be in the Hall of Fame if you had like that kind of crazy career that you were able to get there in a shorter amount of time?
I think so. Yeah, absolutely. And so the way the LPGA points work is you can only really get it four ways, I think. Each tournament win is worth 1 point. Each major win is worth 2 points. What I'm not sure of, and I would guess it's not the case. I don't know if you like double count. So if you win a major, if you get 3 points, my guess is you only get the two for winning the major. So you win a major, you get 2 points. You win any LPGA event, you get 1 point. I think except for the partner event, Beth Ann said. And then the Player of the Year is worth 1 point. So if you win Player of the Year, you get one Hall of Fame point. And then the Vare Trophy is worth 1 point. So, you know, somebody like Nelly Korda, who just won her first major, has won a few times on the LPGA Tour, looks destined to have a great career. Winning something like the Vare Trophy and getting that Hall of Fame point, that's a huge deal. And she's not going to qualify given the number of rounds she played. So that's a bummer for her. Now, Lydia Ko was originally going to skip the Pelican to be over in Europe, Saudi Arabia, but is now coming back to the Pelican because if she plays, I think, 2 rounds at the Pelican and then 4 at the Tour Championship, she will then get to the 70 and has a very good chance of winning the Vera Trophy and getting that Hall of Fame point. So all that said, I love how they do that. It takes out the sports writer bias, BS. It's like it's all out there in front of you. And I wish my plea is for the LPGA. I would love them to create a database on their website that kind of has real-time points tracking. So not just people in the Hall of Fame, but, you know, current players. So you can kind of see where they are at any given time in their Hall of Fame chase.
And like all of their other stats generally that like
I
the
know.
PGA I mean stats cast. Just started. We've got them now, you know, but it, to accumulate too. And it's a bummer too, because, you know, some stats that are floated out on Twitter specifically, you know, people will be like, oh, like MB Park's putting statistics. Right. And then people come at whoever tweeted that and we're like, well, that's only based on, you know, the past like year or so. And, you know, kind of calls it a question. It's like, NV Park's a fucking sick putter. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter whether it's 5 years or just this year. Like, she's fucking sick at it. Like,
I'll
it's not going to go down probably.
Right. Literally, like, anybody connected to the game is like, oh, yeah, she's one of the best putters, male or female, in the game of golf. Yeah, the LPGA, you know, when I talk to Beth Ann or Karen Stupples or, you know, anybody closely connected with the tour players, that's the biggest thing, is like getting a comprehensive stats database. That comes down to tracking, which comes down to having the money and resources to implement it at every tournament. It's very much a shame that they're not there yet. I'm hopeful they will. The KPMG stats packages are certainly a start. I think it's a good, not great situation. But yeah, if you kind of look to what are some things the LPGA could do with an influx of revenue that would make like the fans experience better and the players, honestly, like the stats help the players so much as well. It gives them detailed information on where they're, you know, lacking against their peers, stuff like that. Stats would be one.
Someone told Lydia Ko that she was in the running.
Right. Yeah, I know. Yeah. And just, you know, the website, although the PGA Tour website sucks too. So I don't know what it is about golf. I just wish it would be a very much more user-friendly, like sortable stats, robust database. Those would be two areas I would love to see improve, I guess.
Yeah. Well, so the last question actually that I have kind of on LPGA stuff is who you got for the CME? Who do you think is going to win? Is Jin Young Ko just going to take, like, she seems a little bit unstoppable right now. Today she had an Instagram post that was like all pictures of her with her trophies from the past year. And I was like, this is a flex, like going into the next 2 weeks. So what do you think?
I think she's certainly the smart money. I mean, she's playing the best golf of anybody. I really hope we see a true duel between her and Nelly. I think that would obviously be the best thing from a fan's perspective. I feel like it's a little bit of a cop out to say Jin Young Ko, right?
Just cause right, it is, favorite, but like,
but,
yeah, it is, but it isn't though.
Yeah.
So okay, I think I'll say this.
I think Jin Young Ko wins Player of the Year. My hope is for the CME that somebody not Jin Young Ko or Nelly Korda wins the tour championship. Like, I would, of course, we're huge Madeline Sagstrom fans. Like, somebody like her, I would absolutely be overjoyed to see win the CME. I think it'd be really fun for somebody kind of a dark horse out of nowhere to win the CME. If you need a name, I would just be, you know, throwing shit against the wall. But that would be, you know, if you're asking me how it would play out ideally, that's what I'd love to see.
What would be like the most exciting dark horse for you? So like Madeline is obviously one. Are there any other faves that you have, even going into the Pelican, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not too well versed on like who's on the fringe and who's, you know.
I think number 60 going into the Pelican is Emma Talley.
And I know Mel Reed's like right up there, but not like all the way in.
Mel Reed's got to have a good Pelican. I think she's on the outside looking in right now for this year.
Yeah, she's like 60, in the 60s maybe somewhere or something.
Yeah, she has to have a good week this week. Somebody like gosh, I mean, she's not really a dark horse, but I mean, you guys were at the Solheim Cup, like Leona Maguire.
Oh my God.
She has not won yet on LPGA. That would be an awesome win for her. Who else? Yalimi No was another Solheimer. She's an up and coming American. I think she's down in the 30s on the CME list. Charlie Hull is somebody that I had a lot of respect for, seeing her up close at the Solheim. Sophia Popov,
she's sneaky,
is awesome. Yeah. So I think somebody like that would be cool. But you know, I'll say Madeline Sachs. You know,
yeah,
Madeline's our favorite.
Gotta be loyal.
She is so awesome. I know I'm totally biased, but she's a wonderful human being. So I hope for nothing but good things for her.
Likewise.
Yeah.
So we don't want to keep you here absolutely forever. We could obviously talk to you for the entire rest of the night, and you're on mountain time, so it's a little bit earlier there.
I was gonna say we're just getting started out here.
But do you want to do the gripes and the questions? You got.
I'm good at that. I was gonna say, I thought we were nixing the cues.
Yeah, we're nixing the cues. We're just going to ask the gripes.
So every episode, we do questions for every guest. But recently, I think the favorite club in the bag and then the favorite nightclub are good ones. But people are very exhausted, especially, you know, media personalities like yourself are exhausted by the dream foursome questions. So we're trying out some new material tonight. And one thing that we've been, you know, trying to make a recurring segment is Gruder Golf Gripes, because there are a lot of them out there. So we wanted to open up in general to you. Have you had any gripes recently, either, you know, in the media or in real life or in your travels, or, you know, any gripes you just want to get off your chest?
Well, lots of gripes, ladies. Like, I could keep you for the next hour with gripes.
We were thinking that would be the answer.
Yeah, I don't know what's appropriate to air out here. I have many gripes with just vapid schlock that I read on Twitter. I don't want to I don't think it's worth it to start anything, so I won't name names, but just so much dumb shit on Twitter.
Oh my God, you could name names here. We could use the publicity, honestly.
No, I don't want to be like, you know, Big Randy
headline news.
That's not what I want to do. Big gripe about the weather from the NIT. That one just
that's fair.
That just hit home. You know, I got a gripe with Neil, my associate Neil.
Oh, let's hear it.
Alice Intrigue, you know, we love this.
We had a big tennis grudge match the Thursday before the NIT down in Jack's Beach. I've been playing a lot of tennis out here, ladies.
Cool.
Yeah, I might transition to a strictly tennis-focused golf personality. But
just a country club man.
Yeah, right. he and I had a tennis match, first time we played, talking a lot of smack, and he was very confident. And you know what? I beat him, and I just, you know, I would have liked a little bit more respect going into the match, I think. So a little bit of a gripe there, but I let my game do the talking. What else do I have to gripe about? My sports teams suck. The Reds, you know, the Reds are offloading salary left and right. Looks like they're going into a rebuild this offseason.
Are you a Bengals fan?
Yeah, the Bengals freaking have laid two eggs in a row. I was so happy they got to 5-2. They had beat Baltimore, and now they lost to the Jets and got hammered by the Browns. So that's, you know, being a Bengals fan is, oh God, is a perpetual gripe. I'm sorry for you.
right back at you.
What else do I have to gripe about? I literally, we actually, like, this could be my first segment. You guys keep me up with some stuff. I can gripe.
We
about
have a
anything.
Prompt, actually. Okay. What is the most annoying thing? You have to play golf with a lot of fans. So what is the most annoying thing somebody can do on a golf course that will just drive you crazy?
Oh, gosh. They mean so well. I love playing with people. By and large, I think 97% of my experiences playing with strangers have been great. It's flattering that people enjoy what we do and are eager to tell us about it. I think the one thing that just can get a little bit exhausting is when they want to like plan itineraries for us, whether it be Strapped or Tour Sauce, and you know, you should go here and do this and go here and do this. And it's like, well, I really appreciate the thought of all that, but like in my mind, I just want, like, let me stop you right there. Like, there's no chance in hell we're going to do any of that. Like, the whole point is we do this stuff the way we want to do it. So I appreciate the input. Yeah. I would say that's, I don't know. I hate to say it's annoying, but it's just like, you know, you kind of got to put on a smile and nod for a while they, you know, list out all the courses. But again, it's, I don't want that to be taken the wrong way. It's extremely flattering, and I would rather people be doing that than not watching or caring at all about stuff we do.
Yeah, no, that seems totally fair. When I played with Tron in Denver, we actually got two of the guys we played with didn't know who he was at all. And I was like, does that happen a lot? And he's like, Rich, actually never.
You want to talk about
how do you guys know each other? Scenario. And we were like, what?
Yeah. You want to talk about the absolute dream scenario would be showing up to one of our own events and getting paired with somebody that doesn't know me would be, oh my God, that'd be great. Because and let me expand on that. I think what's tough is, and I'm getting better is, but what's tough is these people know us, right, through videos, and they kind of know a lot of things about us. We don't know anything about them. And so one of the things I try to do immediately is like, I got to find out some stuff about you. Where are you from? What do you like? I need some equal footing to, because my goal is like interact as real people, right? Like, I don't want to be, you know, golf influencer Phil over here. I like, let's just talk like,
it's far like too friends late for that. Talk.
Yeah. So, you know, I would think if anything, I try to steer it away from like just no laying up talk, because that kind of bores me, because that's what I do all day, every day. Like, I want to know about you, and you know, let's see where the conversation goes away from that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the, you know, hey, heavy is the crown, right? You know, like,
I people, know this all sounds, I mean, very it's, whiny.
No,
I,
it, it I isn't though. And like, you know, it seems, I mean, I think that part of the reason that people relate to you guys is that you're very normal and you remind them of their friends and everything. And that's obviously, you know, a blessing and a curse at times. So, yeah. You know, hats off for handling it gracefully. We'll let you end on a nicer note, which is, what is the coolest thing somebody can do to impress you on a golf course? And this isn't even, you know, at one of your events. This is just in general, you know, is there anything cool that you're like, oh, that's a cool thing to have, cool thing to do.
I think just being themselves. Right. And that's, like, I've been starstruck around people, Laura Davies, for instance. So certainly,
may I play?
Yeah, certainly.
May I play you?
Not taking my own advice.
The cousin Greg thing is just really cracking up too.
If our pool game is to be, so shall it be. I just really appreciate when people are just themselves, and you know. I don't know if it's anything they even do consciously, but it's great to just be able to connect with people on a level that's like you would with anybody anywhere, rather than, again, like, oh, you know, I'm from NLU, so, you know, you got to ask me all this. Like, I don't want to do that. I want to know about you, and, you know, maybe we both like baseball or maybe we like basketball. So I guess just speaking for me personally, I just get a kick out of when I can really quickly relate with people and find common interests that I kind of veer away from, you know, just the stuff we put out on video. Because again, for me, that's, I just get sheepish. Like, I don't want to like, I don't know. It just feels really weird to like, just go through all that stuff, right? Like, I just want to kind of make it as normal as possible. I don't know if that's a good answer or not, but
I think it's a good answer.
Just be cool, always wins people. The day. We'll all just be cool. We'll all just be cool. Yeah. I don't know.
That's fantastic. No, we love that.
Okay. Yeah.
That's right. A good one. I think all your answers were great.
Oh, it's very nice.
Very good.
It's true. I think this is fantastic. I was thinking that while we were recording, I was like, I think this is one of our best ones in a while.
I feel like sure. Entirely too much. I'm sorry.
No, what?
That's the whole point. You're the guest. That is the people point. Have said that they like that the guest gets to talk on our podcast. That's been the positive.
We should take probably as some feedback.
Shut the fuck up, you three.
No, you guys are great. And I will say I just felt so comfortable around you guys. I mean, even before recording tonight, it's, you know, it's awesome when IRL goes as seamlessly as, you know, not IRL interactions do. And so credit to you guys for just fostering an environment where people can be comfortable and be themselves. That's not easy to do, and it's very much appreciated.
Well, thank you very much. I won't bring up the fact that you stood us up for the Gwen Stefani concert.
I did do that. It wasn't all my fault because we had one car and those guys needed to capture some film, but it was a very easy decision not to go back downtown for the concert. But I did.
Honestly, she was lip syncing. You probably knew the same way that we knew that the weather was going to be bad at the NIT. You knew in advance that Gwen Stefani was going to lip sync. She kind of phoned it in, honestly.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Controversial take on the Solheim Cup, but I don't think that she gave her best performance in Toledo.
I was going to say, could you imagine shooting Gwen up with True Serum and asking her how excited she is to go to Toledo, Ohio?
Fair.
And I'm allowed to say that because I have family from that area. I'm allowed to say that.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Randy, we really cannot thank you enough. This was phenomenal. A blast hanging out and, you know, very, very glad to be part of the family.
Yeah. If I
can say that.
Yeah. Let me just say this, not to get too sappy, but first of all, of course, thank you for having me on your podcast. You guys are awesome and we are very proud to be associated with you guys. And, you know, as I was telling the story of No Laying Up, it's very easy to see parallels with what you guys are doing. And your genuine camaraderie and friendship and energy, I think, is your greatest asset. And that's what people are drawn to. So kudos to you guys. Keep doing what you're doing. And just very excited to, you know, like I said, to be associated with you guys.
Wow. Wow, I'm going to cry, baby. Thank you very much. It's really nice.
Thank you very, very much.
You were all, I mean, maybe we should release video for this one because we're all like
hanging on every word. I think we all have really shitty day job days too. So that's actually really nice.
It's a Tuesday, Tuesday. You know,
long ass day.
And today. Tuesdays are the worst. I think Monday gets a bad rap. Mondays, I think, are way better than Tuesdays by and large. And I can just, we've been there. Not many people. I can tell you, I've been there with the shitty day job and getting on and doing a podcast and like, sometimes you're like, what are we doing? But you guys have something. And so, you know, if you can keep kind of kindling it and sparking it, it'll be exciting. So good on you.
Wow. Well, we very, very much appreciate it. We also very much appreciate the listeners. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. Really does mean the world to us. So thanks for spending your time with us. And this was a long one too. So that's great. If you got this far, but till we, talk to you again, hang loose, swing easy, and we will, see you out there. The way I always do. How was I to know she was with the Russians too? I was gambling in Havana. I took a little risk. Send lawyers, guns, and money. Dad, get me out of this. Ha! I'm the innocent bystander. Somehow I got stuck between a rock and a hard place, and I'm down on my luck. Yes, I'm down on my luck.
a desperate man. Send lawyers, guns and money. This shit has hit the fan.